This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez with top business stories of the day. Well, let's look at one of the hottest topics that are there. That is the general election, the 14th general election, the upcoming general election. Pakatan Harapan has recently released its election manifesto. It includes all kinds of programs. No surprise, it's gotten a plenty of flak from the ruling government.
Okay, let's start by one of the most contentious promises that they've made, which is basically to abolish GST. Now, the Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Najib Razak, has questioned Pakatan's proposal, saying that if there is no revenue, the country's debt will increase and will become like Greece, so unquote. Now, Finance Ministry Secretary General Tan Sri Irwan Shariga said that Malaysia would stand to lose over 400 billion ringgit if the government were to abolish GST, tolls, PTPTN and excise duty. So now, those calls are not only from BN. In fact, according to IDEAS, which is the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, Pakatan's economic promises were, to quote, unsound.
Well, let's look at four possible scenarios post-AG that the Edge Weekly sketched out and how this will impact the market.
Yeah, so basically the four, these are what our analysts and fund managers have highlighted. The scenarios are base case and most likely scenario, BN to retain its simple majority. Second, BN to win a bigger majority, presumably two-thirds. And third, a hung parliament. And fourth, a surprise Pakatan Harapan victory. So scenario one, well, relief rarely expected if BN retains a simple majority. So with most fund managers and analysts pricing in a simple majority victory for BN in the 14th GE, the stock market is expected to experience a relief rally if this prediction comes true. And remember in GE13, guys, when BN retained power with 133 seats out of 222 seats, despite losing the popular vote, the stock market rebounded positively post-elections.
Yeah, so let's look at scenario two. Now, under scenario two, the FBM KLCI to see a strong rally if BN retains a two-third majority. And so a two-third majority win for BN would boost investor confidence and is projected to translate into a strong market rally. Now, if you look at the third scenario, which they've outlined, it would be potentially a heavy sell down in the event of a hung parliament, as uncertainties then would loom large over the market.
So basically, this is the worst possible outcome for investors. That's what analysts are saying, because buyers are likely to stay away until clarity emerges, and the market is likely to suffer a material decline in the short term under this scenario. Yeah.
Now, so in scenario four, an opposition victory would put Malaysia really in uncharted waters. So now, since BN has been in power since independence, a shock opposition victory then would really, you know, put a spanner in the works in terms of, you know, how do we move forward. So analysts would predict that a negative knee-jerk reaction is expected from such a scenario. So also a less than smooth transition of power could also rattle the market.
And what's interesting about this transition of power question that's in scenario four is that when we had the general election in 2008, the loss of so many states, especially in the richest states of the Federation, the loss that the Barisan had and the gain for Pakatan Rakyat, was that you saw a smooth transition of power under the Prime Ministership of Abdullah Ahmad Badawi. We saw, in fact, that Malaysia can see peaceful transitions of power, even though the ruling party has been in power for so long. They willingly allow the process and the winners to take power.
So basically, it's just they're just saying negative knee-jerk reaction.
It could possibly be, right?
And but since, after that, what happens, we don't know.
And what's interesting is because Penang and Selangor have been held by the federal opposition now two terms, the question is, you know, whether it will be such a shock for the federal government to go to the Pakatan Rakyat.
And that's a good point, Sharad, because at that time, in 2008, we actually entered uncharted waters, so to speak, with five states falling. Yeah. And I think there was a lot of concerns among voters that about the ability of the opposition to actually run the states. That has, well, some of those fears basically have been proven unfounded.
Yeah. And also, just before we move on to the next story, the statement by the Prime Minister says if there is no revenue, the country's debt will increase and will become like Greece. I believe the federal opposition, Pakatan Harapan, is not calling for zero revenues for government. They're just saying that the revenues as the configuration of revenues will not remain the same because they're going to replace the GST with the sales and tax, sales and purchase tax,
yeah,
right?
But GST,
sales
and, but GST is a broad-based tax and it has basically we've gotten additional revenue from GST for the country. So it depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, right? And also because the fact that, I mean, from a global best practices, countries are going towards, as Joyce pointed out, just a broad-based tax like, or value-added tax like GST. Now, if they propose to then transition to a different tax model, there's going to be a gap for a period of time in terms of government coffers. Where is that going to come from in the short term? Are we going to see a short-term rise in deficits? So, I mean, these are questions that we need to look at the Pakatan's manifesto.
Yeah, and I look forward to a discussion with the people at Ideas about their analysis as well. Well, let's move now on to a story on retail. The weekend's just ended. And how many of us spend time at a mall during the weekend? Now, this morning, we have news that a retail group that works closely with malls is in the news, Parkson.
Yeah, so latest news, Sharad, is that Parkson is looking to open in several new locations with a presence in newer and more exciting malls while exiting those that do not fit in the company's market dynamics. So basically, they're looking at a few strategic areas in Damansara, Bukit Jalil, Klang and Malacca.
Yeah, so a company spokesman also told Starbiz that it's looking to open two new malls in China and perhaps a few more in the pipeline as well. Now, that spokesperson also said the evolving nature of the retail industry means that certain older malls have become less relevant to compared to newer malls, which are then more appealing to shoppers. Now, Parkson said that it would take a larger spaces on a net lettable basis in the newer malls.
Okay, so, but didn't they just exit some stores recently?
That's right, Shrek. Just last month in February, Parkson closed three stores. That's two in Klang Valley and one in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. And in Klang Valley, it closed the Sungai Wang Plaza's 107,000 square feet outlet, which it opened in 1987. That's so long ago, and they just closed it. And they also closed the one in Maju Junction. That was they were anchor tenant of the mall, and they started operating there in 2014.
Yeah, so essentially, the spokesperson said that the closing and opening of malls really is part and parcel of stores, part and parcel of the business. Essentially, what it is market dynamics are changing, customer demographics are profiles are changing, locations are changing. Also, they therefore need to react to these changing landscapes. So they need to alter their mix and their offerings and their locations depending on these demographic changes.
I mean, what's fascinating is when malls close down, as one did in my own neighborhood, as SS2 Mall.
Yeah.
You know, it's turned into a ghost town. There's a lot of talk in the neighborhood because it's now just an empty building. It's a shell of a building. And, you know, buildings like that can gather all kinds of strange things. The question is, what's going to happen next? There's talk that it might be turned into apartments.
Property development. That's the money spinning.
Because the building remains. Right? I mean, the malls can exit.
And
the shops exit.
Good
building
actually, yeah. When it comes to for property in a way.
Yeah,
and Joyce, one of the things is if you look at what's the retail Armageddon that's happening in the US, essentially what the older malls are being repurposed is really to go in either into alternative housing, also as destinations, lifestyle destinations, events, theme parks and so forth. So will we see that here? I mean, that's left to be seen.
Well, you know, talking about the challenges for malls, we spoke recently to Dato' Joyce Yap, CEO of Retail for Kuala Lumpur Pavilion Assembly Beat, and the challenging operating landscape for malls. Here's what she had to say.
If you look at it carefully, the strong, the fittest ones survive. Not only survive, they survive very well. There must be a secret or something behind it. So that's what we are talking about. You know, to stay relevant, you have to know the critical success factor. You have to evolve. The hardware is there, okay? But the business model needs to be changed.
That was Dr. Dato Joyce Yap, a CEO of retail for Kuala Lumpur Pavilion Sdn Bhd.
Well, guys, there is an influx of retail space entering the market over the next 2 to 3 years. Greater KL has over 120 malls, and at least 10 more are set to open shop or launch soon, right? So basically, how to stay ahead or keep afloat ahead, you know, in this overcrowded pool, right? And currently looking at Parkson, not looking at malls, but just retail players, Parkson has 114 stores in the region, with 44 in Malaysia, occupying a total of 5 million square feet.
Yeah, so if we come back to Parkson, you know, could it be perhaps that outlets are too close to each other and causing cannibalization? So if you think about Sungai Wong Mall, basically it's about half a kilometre away from Pavilion, which opened in 2007, right? So essentially, you know, are they cannibalizing each other? And in its 2016 annual report, Parkson was one of the top 10 largest tenants in the the Pavilion shopping mall.
Yeah, well, spokesperson told Starbiz that Sungai Wong Plaza used to be a popular hangout several decades ago, but market dynamics have changed. So I guess it boils down to the mall itself. Whether can they reinvent itself? Are they still relevant? But just coming back to Parkson, looking at its earnings, is not doing that well. It fell into the red for FY 2015 onwards, and it is still loss-making in its latest FY 2017 results. So basically, retailers, it is tough. It is challenging. You know, what is the strategy moving forward?
Well, you know, talking about strategies, interestingly, one of the big, some of the biggest disruptors to the malls, or the brick and mortar malls that we know and some of us loved, are Amazon and Alibaba. They're now, having disrupted the model, are now coming back and putting money into brick and mortar.
Yeah, so most of them are actually investing in brands with existing store networks and retail expertise. So let's look at Amazon. They bought Whole Foods with more than 460 stores in 2017. And they also opened 13 physical bookshops since 2015. Now, Alibaba also acquired a department store chain in China with 29 stores and 17 shopping malls last year.
Yeah, so basically it's online going offline. Right, it looks like they're coming back to that. It's interesting to see, to watch this space, to see how they're going to pull this off. And basically the traditional business models, the players, how are they going to survive this, and how are they basically transforming?
Are people going to love their malls in the future? I don't know. Very quickly, we have a story on connected cars. Iris Corp and Green Packet are the front runners in that game locally.
Yeah, so essentially connected cars are cars with internet access, so you can get internet for your various devices within your vehicle itself, kind of like Wi-Fi and wheels. And so in Malaysia, the government has a connected car project that could affect how much we pay for road tax as well as for our insurance. So according to a story on Starbiz, both Iris Corporation and Green Packet are looking to bid for this project.
Joyce, very quickly, are these companies very strong in their financials? Do we have any sense of what who they are, really?
Well, Iris posted net losses in 6 out of the last 7 quarters. So basically, that's one. And Green Packet, they've posted net losses in 8 out of the last 10 years. But, you know, basically, whether or not they'll get the contract, interesting space to watch.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the opening numbers on the market and more analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.